Hello, good afternoon, everyone. I think we're going to go ahead and start this evening's program, and just wanted to introduce myself briefly and share a little bit about why I'm so excited for today's screening and the panel discussion, and most importantly, for the work that you all are engaged in through the various organizations that you're a part of, and really connecting, or I shouldn't say connecting, helping to unleash the real, I think, sort of deep-seated commitment that the Latino community has to the environment and to conservation issues. So my name is Julie Chavez Rodriguez. I'm a special assistant to the president for public engagement here at the White House. I've been here for 5 years now. So I've had the beautiful opportunity to see, I think, the tremendous impact that we've had across a number of different issue areas. But I will say that I started my journey with this administration at the Department of the Interior. So that's why I'm so excited to be here today, to see the faces in this room, to be able to see, I think, the transformational sort of efforts that we've been able to bring to bear to really and effectively engage communities of color in the great outdoors, in environmental issues, as well as in conservation issues. When I started with the Department of Interior, it was in September 2009. And then Secretary Ken Salazar had a very important mandate for all of us. And it was about making sure that we were engaging young people of color in the great outdoors. And I first started working as his deputy press secretary, but then all of a sudden found out that they were starting to build and create a new office within the Department of the Interior called the Office of Youth Programming and Youth Employment. And I had had some experience doing service learning work and working on youth development programs. And so they asked me if I would help to, help to lead this office. And over the course of at least the year that I was there, we were able to increase, youth internships and really targeting youth of color by 50%. And just last month, I was able to join Maite and others in recognizing 50 of those Latino interns that were placed in our national parks throughout the country. So for me, it's just an exciting sort of, as we start to close out this administration, to be able to see how much has happened over the course of the last 8 years. And a huge part of that is really thanks to each and every one of you all in the room. You know, one thing I like to say as I reflect on sort of why the president even ran for office to begin with was the fact that, he ran for office not because of what he could do, but because of what we could do together. And he said that, if we on this journey actually are able to win the election, we're going to do more than just, win an election. We're going to actually be able to transform government and make sure that government is really reflecting the face of America today. And so for me, it's an honor to be able to open up this evening's program, to be able to highlight, again, the tremendous accomplishments of the panelists you'll hear from, but then also the film itself. And I was, speaking to Jose briefly before I came up, and he was talking about just the origins of the name, the notion of Estamos Aquí. Some of you all have probably heard that whole adage about the fact that the Latino community has been a part of this country forever, right? That notion that we didn't necessarily cross the borders crossed us. And I think that that's an important part of what this film is conveying, is that we've been here, we've been in this country, we've been in this space of environmentalism, of conservation, of a real, ethic to not just to our communities, but really to the sort of environment that we're a part of and that we live in. And so it is about unleashing that kind of real sense of commitment to our land, our waters, our great spaces outdoors, but also thinking about how are we inspiring current and future generations to really find that connection for themselves. I know for me, growing up as a kid, some of my most amazing experiences were going to White Sands, New Mexico, and being able to explore that area. I grew up in the state of California, and so of course we have a wealth of national and state parks that are, run kind of up and down the state. And so going to Yosemite and seeing and trying to, you know, as I always did as a kid, trying to hug a giant sequoia, which obviously I'm a small person, so that was a little ridiculous to even think about. But those were some of my earliest experiences, and those are the things that I really cherish. And that I think we've helped to continue to preserve. Folks know that, you know, this president has been able to, you know, protect more land than any previous president. We just designated our, you know, marine area as a protected space. We've set, I think, a new path for what it is that we can do as a country to ensure that these great places and spaces that we know and love and that are a part of who we are and part of our childhood are ones that are really, you know, protected forever. And that it's not something that when I get older that I have to tell, you know, my nieces or my niece's children that, oh, well, back in the day we used to have these beautiful landscapes and these beautiful areas, but it's actually something that we can show them and something we can bring them, make them sort of a part of. And so I'm just really excited to be able to kick off today, to welcome you all to the White House. But more importantly, just hopefully, you know, in hearing from folks today and seeing the film, it also inspires all of us to sort of, you know, to really take on that call to action and to be able to do more with, you know, whether it's in our personal lives or professional lives or helping to involve, you know, more young people. Seeing so many of the young faces around the room and maybe the youngest face that I see right here in the second row. That's what it's about. It's about making sure that we're giving back, and it's about making sure that we are also bringing the next generation up with us. So thank you all so much for everything that you do. Thank you to the tremendous, you know, work that went into this film. And also, I was remiss for not thanking my colleagues at the Council on Environmental Quality for hosting today's screening. But we just really appreciate everything, and we hope that you all will continue to run full speed ahead with us, since we still have a lot of work to do, even though our time, our clock is ticking. But as the president reminds us constantly, you know, big things happen in the fourth quarter, and I think we can all attest to the fact that we've done a lot of big things this fourth quarter. So thank you all very much. Enjoy the film and the rest of the program.
Hi, everyone. Good to see all of you. Good to see familiar faces and new faces. Thanks for being here today, and thanks for CEQ for organizing this. When I started in the administration in 2009 with Joan Padilla and Ken Salazar at the Interior Department, I don't think we would have imagined being at this place where we have so many conservation leaders and a screening of a film focused on Latinos in the outdoors and conservation here at the White House. So it's a special thrill for me and for all of us. And, you know, we've been in this administration for a long time, but this is still special and it doesn't get old for us. So it's great to be here with all of you. I'm Francisco Carrillo, the Deputy Assistant Secretary for Intergovernmental and External Affairs at the Department of Energy. I know some of you are thinking, why is energy here and involved in a conservation effort? But actually, when I first started at DOE, Secretary Moniz and Secretary Jewell signed the Manhattan Project National Historic Park, which designated three sites dedicated to the Manhattan Project that are co-managed by NPS and DOI. So it was a thrill to actually see that my first month of leaving Interior and starting at Energy. And like I said, I started the Department of Interior with Ken Salazar. Julie Rodriguez, who you just heard, was also a part of that initial team. Joan Padilla and a few other colleagues who are focused on getting folks outdoors, especially diverse youth and underrepresented populations. And we've made a lot of strides, and it's shown here by the leadership of our partner organizations like Latino Outdoors, the Latino Conservation Alliance, and the great groups that support those efforts. I can name quite a few, and I see some leaders here who support those efforts, so I just want to give you all kudos. There's also a growing momentum, a growing movement in the diverse, the minority communities really advocating environmental justice, climate change, and clean energy, which is huge because I remember working for Secretary Salazar and a lot of Latino organizations, a lot of organizations, period, that were focused on Latino issues weren't really talking about energy and the environment. So we've made big strides, thanks again to the leadership of conservation organizations, Latino conservation Alliance, Green Latinos, and others. And now we have this tremendous pulpit here, thanks to the great work of all of you, where we get to showcase a screening. And so I'm just honored to be here and thankful to all of you for your work, because you guys are the ones who are pushing us, pushing the administration. You have obviously the leadership of the administration, the White House, Council on Environmental Quality, Office of Public Engagement. It really goes up to the higher-ups, to the president himself, who's dedicated his administration to preserving these lands that tell the full story of America. And as you saw recently with the Marine monuments he designated, also the Stonewall National Park dedicated to LGBT, the LGBT movement, Harriet Tubman recognizing African Americans, and the Cesar Chavez monument recognizing Julie's grandfather and the farm workers movement. So I don't need to take up too much of your time. I do want you guys to know that DOE is focused on building our clean energy future, combating climate change, and Secretary Moniz, along with our administration, other cabinet leaders are focused on that effort. But you all play a key role in advocating for quicker solutions to environmental justice issues and our clean energy future. You guys have the the advocacy to really push us, the government, push Congress, and it's showing. It's really working. The fact that the Congressional Hispanic Caucus Institute has had sessions and panel forums on clean energy and healthy parks, healthy Latinos is a real testament to your efforts. And then the National Hispanic Leadership Agenda, a traditional civil rights organization group, a coalition, is now focused, has a whole renewable and clean energy, climate, and environmental justice movement. So it's testament to the work, again, that all these organizations from Latino Conservation Alliance, Latino Outdoors, of course, Hispanic Access Foundation, I can name you all, Echo, it's really great to be here. And again, the groups that support those efforts, the Conservation Lands Foundation, Outdoor Alliance, you name it. So I just wanna thank all of you for your leadership, and I'm really thrilled to be here today, and I hope to enjoy the film with you all. Thank you very much.
Good afternoon. Hello, my name is Janae Magana. I'm with the White House Office of Public Engagement, and I am the person that does the Latino and immigration outreach work here in the building and for President Obama. It's really exciting to be with you here today, and I'm gonna help moderate a wonderful panel. I will say that when I was first asked to be part of this panel and to join, I got really, really excited. In fact, Beau called me and my face lit up. Because this is an issue that's near and dear to my heart. I'm from a small town in Texas on the U.S.-Mexico border called Del Rio, Texas. Has anybody ever heard of Del Rio? Yeah. Woo! Okay, a couple people. So if you've heard of Del Rio, you might know that there's a beautiful area called Amistad National Recreation Area. So this area was just a few minutes away from my household. I grew up in a very modest home, but every day in the summertime, my dad would get home from work and say, vamonos, vamonos, we're going to the park. And we would take off and we would go to this national park, which had a beautiful lake that was shared between the US and Mexico called Lake Amistad, which is Spanish for friendship. So I have very near and dear memories to my heart of going to this national park, of spending my time hiking around, going swimming. But really, I remember the time with my family, and I remember how much my parents made me love the outdoors. And that's why still, to this day, when I can get out of this building, I try to get out as much as possible. But it was people like my parents and people like Mrs. Overfelt in Del Rio, Texas, who took a classroom of us to Big Bend National Park for the first time to go hike and to go explore, which really opened up my eyes. And so I am so proud of the work that these folks are doing, and I'm about to introduce them. But I know that together we're going to continue to encourage the Latino community to get engaged in sustainability and environmental protection. This month we're also celebrating Hispanic Heritage Month, so it's a great time to really uplift some of these stories. So I'm very honored with us today to have, first I'll introduce Nidia Gutierrez, who's a Latino Outdoors Coordinator in Washington, D.C. She's a Texas native, welcome, who's worked on a variety of coastal research and restoration projects and currently is an associate at the Dewey Square Group, working directly with DSG's Latinovations team to collaborate with national and regional Latino organizations and coalitions. Welcome.
Thank you.
And then to the left of her, we have Eduardo Gonzalez, who is a Latino Outdoors Outing Leader in Sacramento and a student of Natural Sciences at California State University, and is also a first-generation Mexican-American and has also worked for the United States Forest Service. Thank you for being with us today. And then to the left of him, Juan Tejas, did I pronounce that right? Very good. Is a Latino Outdoor Regional Coordinator for California in the Central Valley. Juan lives and works out of Modesto, California, and is also a national leader as part of the Natural Leaders Network. And then over here at the very end, we have Raquel Rangel, a Latino Outdoors Regional Coordinator for California and Central Valley. Raquel is a student at California State University, majoring in biological science, and regularly volunteers as well. And so thank you so much. I know each one of you has a little bit of a different background and story, but I think I'm going to start off. We'll start with Raquel, and we'll work our way down for the first question. But tell us, why is this work important to you, and why did you join Latino Outdoors?
I think I believe I joined Latino Outdoors when I was about to change my whole career or whatever it might be. I used to volunteer for like outdoor programs, either nonprofit or banding geese with the U.S. Fish and Wildlife. But I felt like there was something missing there. I felt that I wasn't being accepted or being part of a group. And then it was going to be like my last term that I was going to be there, and that's where I met Jose. And I saw like somebody like me doing the same work that somebody else cared. And it's just like this like whole connection, like feeling that you just get. And then somebody else also understands and is going through the same thing of something that it doesn't seem like it's for a Latino person like me to be part of. And I like the whole mission that Latino Outdoors has, and just to get others and that have the same common goal and try to get more of the community out there as well. So I think that was one of the reasons why wanted to.
Thank you, Raquel. I appreciate that. And now, Juan, can you tell us, you know, why is this work important to you? Why did you join Latino Outdoors?
I joined Latino Outdoors 3 years ago. And yes, Jose recruited me. It was his grand plan, grand idea, that we would be here eventually.
And it worked.
So, I mean, I don't know if he thought that specifically, but I think for me, I grew up in a single-parent household. My father had left, and I'm multiracial. I'm white, and I'm Latino. And so for me, growing up, I wasn't connected to my Latino culture as much as I had wanted to. And so through bits and pieces, you know, I was able to gather part of me. And then when Jose approached me, he was like, you know what, like, we're doing this. I know you like to get outside. Come join me for this idea that I have. And for me, it was extraordinary because not only was I able to get outside and be with people like me, but also like immerse myself more into my culture that I had missed for so much of my life. And now, 3 years in, I am extremely proud to say that I view Latino Outdoors as a tool of creation that we can build in each and every one of our communities all throughout the nation. And my colleagues and most of the individuals that know about Latino Outdoors has a great opportunity to do the same thing in their own communities.
Thank you. That's wonderful. Eduardo, tell us a little bit. You know, why did you join? What does this mean to you? Why is it important to you?
Great. So much like my colleagues here, it all starts off with a conversation that I had with Jose, a phone call, of course. But there is some substance behind it. So the idea of just like throwing this idea, I had the privilege of working at an outdoor school right out of high school, where I had just this wonderful opportunity to work with fifth and sixth graders and taking them out into the woods. And for me, that was my very first experience with the forest. I didn't see a forest until I was in the fifth grade because of one of these camps. And when I left, I felt a little empty, and I felt that I was missing that part of me. Like, being able to take out kids felt special and something that needed to happen. And when Jose approached me with this idea, it brought back that hope that, yes, we can keep this work going. It doesn't have to be at an established school, but it can be with our communities just by us acting as youth that have a passion for this work and that believe in it. So I found a home. I found a place that I felt that my identity was validated as a Latino and as an outdoorsman. So I'm grateful for that. Yeah.
Thank you so much. That's great. Nidia, tell us, why is this important to you? Why did you join?
Well, I share a little bit of your passion. I'm also a border town person, grew up in Brownsville, Texas. So I had the privilege and the honor of experience what it's like to be in the outdoors in terms of the beach. So to our east, we have a 27-mile long island named South Padre Island. And as a kid, that was a vacation. We didn't come from a wealthy means. So for us, a vacation in the summertime was taking a 20-minute drive east to South Padre. And as a kid, experiencing that freedom, experiencing the sunset, experiencing the just being able to run around and the camaraderie that comes with a beach like that. Because in South Padre, you're kind of able to get on the beach, pitch a tent and hang out as long as you want, you know, build a fire. And it brought everybody together. And it was those moments that make you realize that this is something special. And that led me to, at the University of Texas at Brownsville, I graduated with an environmental science degree. And actually, straight out of college, I ended up serving with the Obama campaign, doing fundraising out of Austin, Texas. So once I got to DC, I started doing more policy work. But once I learned more about Latino outdoors and met some folks from around there, another shout out to Jose, I can't just let that go. But it was one of those experiences that led me to get reconnected to the environmental movement and do things like my colleagues here said, on our own without necessarily having a established entity to do so. So it's been an honor. It's been about a year and a half, and I look forward to seeing what else we can do with this.
That's great. Thank you so much. So we're hearing things from inspiring kids, connecting to our community, connecting to our culture, a tool of creation. These are all wonderful things. So thank you so much for sharing that. And of course, the connection to Jose, too. So as you've been going through this work, I think all of you have been really great leaders in this area. Can you tell us a little bit about your accomplishments or success in this work? And we can start this way this time and go that way.
Sure, and what I'm seeing here more of is we're starting to develop lasting relationships with the agencies, with National Park Service, who we've partnered with a lot. They've given us the opportunity to utilize some of their resources, including bicycles, or attend a park after dark and build an event of which is close to the public but is open to the groups that we bring in. And using that as a camaraderie and as an opportunity to show folks what is out there. And what's really fulfilling to see and to hear is that folks who've been in DC, who are transplants from other regions and across the world, and they tell me, I'd never knew about this. This is in my backyard. I can take the metro, get on to Kenilworth and experience the ponds and go birding. And that's kind of what's more of an accomplishment for me, is seeing people that are now doing that on their own, that they're now able to take their friends out kayaking and experiencing all these other things. And I still have yet to see everything that is available out here, so I'm definitely working to be that person to be able to share as much as I can. And that's part of the motivation, is that people just come back and say, oh my God, I need to do this some more. And these are the future stewards of the outdoors, and especially people with young families. Like we said, you know, the kids are where it's at, and if we get more of the the children out there are experiencing stuff that I got to experience, which led me to do this kind of work. So it's part.
Thank you. That's great. And I'll volunteer if you ever want to take somebody out. Okay. Feel free to take me. Eduardo, tell us a little bit. What are some of the accomplishments or successes that you've seen in your work?
Sure. So most of the accomplishments that I see are within the individuals themselves that come out onto our outings. These are people that and kids that usually don't get to go out to the outdoors. And for a lot of them, the first time having these outdoor experiences that wouldn't otherwise happen if it wasn't for individuals like us going out there and getting them out. Just there's a sense of accomplishment and reward in having a kid that's out there and just like, hey, can I take a picture with you? Because they're just like taking in that moment. And for me, if that memory they can remember, that's an accomplishment in itself. Yeah,
that's great. Very beautiful. Thank you. Juan, how about you? What are some of the successes, accomplishments you've seen?
I've seen many successes within my colleagues. Their ability to grow and manifest such vigor with the events they do, and also I'm a father, so I think I've seen a huge success in like my interaction with my son. I mean, he has grown and he wants to climb mountains, and I mean, he's a little five-year-old with the spirit of a tiger, you know, and so I'm also Tigre Senior, so that's the main thing. I mean, the key is to connect people to nature and their culture, and so I've seen huge successes within not only my family but also my colleagues.
Thank you, Juan. Raquel, how about you?
I started doing some health walks on a regional park there in Modesto. And it's already going to be my second or third year already doing them. And I remember one day it was raining, and like the parents were kind of like scared because they don't have like the right equipment and whatnot. But I had taken like extra ponchos for the kids, and we end up doing the walk. And then, and the kids enjoyed it. At the end of the day, the ponchos did not work since there was a playground and the kids decided to like run around and go on the slide and all that good stuff. But they really enjoyed it. And then a year after, I get this little girl, 4 years old, comes up to me. We're like finishing a walk. And then she's like, hey, Raquel, are we gonna do it again? And I was like, do what again? And then she's like, you know, like the other time, like long time ago, that we were walking in the rain, you know? And I was like, sure, do you want to walk in the rain? And she's like, yeah. I was like, okay, well, just for you, we'll walk in the rain. But unfortunately, this year, no rain. But it's just like those memories that, like, it stuck to her, you know? It's like she was 3 when she did that, the walk. So I think that's like an accomplishment. They're like and it's not like a national park that we went or a state park or anything like that. It's a local park that's right behind their neighborhood, and they barely get to go to it. So I think just making that connection to like something near home.
And that memory for them.
And that memory for the little kid. Yeah.
That's great. Mm-hmm. That's really great. It's wonderful to hear some of the successes that you've had. You know, today we're here at the White House, and from the White House we have the ability to really look at this issue at a more national level too, especially this month as we celebrate Hispanic Heritage Month and we celebrate the diversity in the Latino community as well. As we think through that, and we'll start over here on this side with Nidia, but how does your work connect to and inform the national discussion and need for change around diversity and inclusion in our public lands?
Yeah, and I think it's important to point out the title of the film, Estamos Aquí, We Are Here, in English. And being a part of an organization like Latino Outdoors gives you the opportunity to connect. And what I mean by connect is connect with national organizations, with agencies, and other organizations that are focused on either health or environmental issues, and all these things all come full circle at the end of the day. So even harnessing the power of social media and being available digitally, we've become people who are getting reached out to in terms of, you know, we want to build an event, we want to work with the community. And I'm seeing that a lot more, and I'm getting phone calls and emails of organizations that just want to learn more. And the fact that there's organizations that traditionally aren't as diverse, now they, you know, they're welcoming and they want to hear more about us, they want to know about our story. And statistically, Latinos, you know, we show that we care about the environment. You know, my grandparent was a farm worker, you know, back in the Cesar Chavez days. So I had the privilege of visiting his farm where they grew sorghum. And this was back when I was 4 years old. This was one of my earliest memories. So being able to have that experience and share it with folks who don't necessarily have that, you know, it's definitely a privilege. And connecting with the national discussion is something that we want to continue doing, things like this, panels, events, and having that platform is something that is a privilege for us to continue the conversation and be plugged in.
Thank you so much. And Eduardo, do you want to tell us a little bit about how the work that you're doing is connecting at the national level and helping with diversity as well?
Sure. With the work we do, with taking groups out and families out, I think we're helping with the whole movement, like with a wonderful act of every fourth grader in a park. You can give the kid a pass, but I think we're helping by making that link from the families and the kids to the park. So yes, they have that pass, but what's telling you that they're gonna use it? Just because they have it doesn't mean that they're gonna be able to go out there. So being able to bridge that gap between the families within the cities and taking them out to the parks, I think is a huge step that's critical, and that may be missing a bit, but I feel that through our work that we're helping kind of do that. Mm-hmm.
That's great. Thank you so much. And Juan, how about you?
National. I really believe that, I mean, thinking about a national level awareness, I think it really starts at a community level first. I mean, most times poor individuals can't think past their survival. And for a long time, you know, that was how I identified with my surroundings. Like, I wasn't able to think past, like, providing food on my plate or whatever as a young man. So I really want to say that we need to support our communities in better ways, because there's so much noise before going outside, before you can get outside. When you talk about just policing in our streets or immigration policies, I think those really, on a national level, need to support the communities in a positive way, just so that we can be able to feel comfortable getting outside. So I think we help in like making people feel comfortable in the outside and the outdoors, but I really believe that on a national level we need to be focused on really addressing those key points.
That's great and helpful also for the conversation as we think through here at the White House. And Raquel, and, you know, how does the work that you're doing connect to and inform on the national level as well?
Yeah, I have to agree with mi colega Zaki. I think it starts at, like, in the community level as well, starting with each familia, being able to take them out. I sometimes like think to myself, like, should I target like just the youth, or should I target, you know, college students? Should I target like parents or whatnot? But then I always like think back, and I'm like, no, I'm just going to invite the whole family, because the kid could experience his experience either at the outdoors and goes back home and tells the parent, and then the parent's like, you know, like, I don't know where you went, so I can't take you back there. But me trying to like get the whole family out there, teach them like the process, like other things that they need to do or take, or how to look into like research on like to the park, I think it gives them more of a connection, and then they start creating memories. They start thinking about conservation, how to keep that thing, the environment, healthy and whatnot. Yeah. And I think that will also just like keep growing as
continue to build off that. Yeah, no, thank you. This is really helpful, too, to see how the work that you're doing at your community level does get to D.C. here in today's panel with this audience, and you're able to share those stories. So you're definitely making a huge impact. I think some of you have shared a little bit in your conversations just about that connecting to the culture and the work that you're doing. But I want to dig in a little bit deeper. And the next question is really, how does your cultural identity inform this work? And really, I'll open it up, whoever wants to answer this first. But tying that cultural identity to the work that you're doing, and want to dig a little deeper here. So anybody like to take that first?
I'll go ahead and take some. Well, like I mentioned before, we try to dig back as far as we can to see where my family originated from and our history. And unfortunately, we haven't been able to dig so much as so far back as we'd like to. But just being able to, as a kid, like I said, when I was 4 years old, I visited my grandfather's farm. And seeing how they lived, and it was an acre of, at that point, it was dried up land. But they had a hut the size of like this part of the room, and seeing how they lived and how small it was a family unit of 12 children, and understanding that, you know, you lived off of the land, that's how you made money, and that's how, you know, my grandfather supported the family. So I'm so thankful that they were able to take me and that I was able to remember as a four-year-old. But harnessing these stories and reminding myself that we're all here for a reason, and every time I do an event or any time I'm presented an opportunity, I think of them, and I think of how I'm not allowed to slip, where, you know, I have to do the most I can for the people that whose shoulders I stand on. So I think a lot about birding when I think about this, as some folks might know that I'm a birder. And birds see no boundaries. They see no of our invisible lines called borders. They travel up and down South Central America up to the Arctic and come right back. So I can see the connection between what my family did to get to the United States and build a home for us, and, you know, giving me the privilege to be here now in front of you fine folks here. And it just reminds me that, you know, it's just like birds. They come up and they migrate to available resources, and, you know, to provide for their own young or to provide for their own living and generations. So that's a way of which I connect the cultural background to what I do now.
That's great. That's beautiful. I love that. So anybody else, how you connect that cultural identity to the work that you're doing?
Yes. I think it's mostly sharing stories, like storytelling, because I invite my mom on all my outings that I do, because I want her to get a sense of like the things that I'm doing, and try to see the outdoors in a different way, because the way that she had grown up, didn't have much, and the outdoors was, you know, that's a way of living. Than for now that I'm, that the way I'm using is for recreational, you know? And I have talked to my dad, it's like, hey, let's go camping. And then he's like, why do I want to be poor? You know, it's like, so it's a different way of perspective to see it. So, but then if we like go and share the same space and introduce them to like a different way or have a different experience of what camping is, or going hiking, or the outdoors, instead of just what they lived to survive. Mm-hmm. So we try to like, and that's when I think feel like they open up more and share those stories, and then in something that maybe I didn't know, or their grandkids might not know.
That's great. Thank you so much, Raquel. Juan Eduardo, do either one of you want to
address? I think culture, I mean, along our Latino Outdoors adventures, I mean, I've seen us bring, like, piñatas to a state and national park. I mean, and just having that sense of togetherness, you know, bumping Latino music as we drive up to the campsite, you know, things like that really emphasize our identity and the things that we enjoy. And bringing that to the campsite, bringing that to on the hiking trip. And so Just that in itself is something to be proud of.
Yeah.
So.
Yes. Thank you, Eduardo.
Great. Yeah. So thinking back, so you brought back like Mexico and like those ideas that they come with and whatnot. And sometimes they think, yeah, like why do I want to go spend the weekend and like in the woods? Like I came from that environment.
Yeah.
But then I think back, I had the privilege of being able to go back to Mexico about every summer as a kid, and we would spend it on my grandfather's dairy farm, and we'd be like just working the ground, like working the land. And on weekends, though, we would have the opportunity to go down to what they call the Pánico. It's the river, part of the Green River that runs part of the area. It's like this beautiful section, rocky, and I kid you not, there's carps the size like this, like out there. And I remember there's a picture of my tío like just holding it up. It's like, it's pretty awesome. But anyway, the point I'm saying is that these families come over, and my family's like, you come over here, and then it's just like, oh, let's go to the river. It's like, no, I don't want to. But why not? Like, if you bring them back, if you bring up the memory of, like, a Pánico, it's like, oh, yeah, like, a Pánico was really nice. Like, well, what's the difference between a Pánico and the Sacramento River? Like, do we have places that can take you back to that and bring you back to your own memories of that culture that you spent, like, in your time there? And, like, reflecting on our visit, we actually had also the wonderful opportunity to go to the Arboretum here in D.C. And just walking around there, like, we were finding plants like arnica. I was like, oh, yeah, I know what my grandma would be saying. It's like, oh, yeah. It's like, oh, that's good for the toothache. You know, just like put it in your mouth. Or like cola de caballo, like the horsetail or whatnot. It's like, oh, that's good for riñones, you know, for the kidneys. So when we take our families and the kids out on these hikes, we're able to tie these cultural pieces together and bring them back to what they know. And now they have a new relationship with that landscape. It's like, oh, this is very much like my home, and this is now my home, and you can go back and visit. So we're not too removed. Yeah.
This is great. I have to say, as each one of you is speaking, I'm listening to my family's voices and hearing the stories. There was the one time my grandma tried to cut the nopales in the national park. I was like, no, grandma. I can't do that.
Breakfast.
Breakfast for us. But, you know, it's so beautiful to hear these stories. And also, you know, I think back, my family's from Central Mexico too, and we did como días de campo, where we would all go out and, you know, just enjoy the outdoors together. And so it's really heartwarming to hear all these beautiful stories. So I know time-wise, I think we're gonna do the last question really quickly just to close this out. And this is something, you know, in all your stories that you've been telling and the work that you've been doing, you've had wonderful successes up until now, right? But what does that vision of success look for our community and for the future in the long term? And so I know we're a little limited on time because we want to get to our next speaker, but we'd just love to hear in just a few words what your long-term vision of success is.
Sure, and I'll just do a summarized answer for that. I think part of what I see in the future is getting Latinos in and out. So what I mean is in the environmental movement professionally and outdoors recreationally, so they can be able to bring more people both in and out in those senses. And I'll wrap it there.
Thank you.
Great. I just think it's about empowering youth like ourselves. I have come to recognize that it has been about those opportunities that we get. Several years ago, I wasn't sure where I was going, and here we are. Estamos aquí. We're here at the White House. And so I see value in that. So it's about sharing these experiences and taking these kids out and making them own it and feel empowered to go out and change for the better as far as environment. Yeah.
One of the long-term goals I have, I mean, right now I'm working on building a community center for the outdoors in my neighborhood. And so we have a regional park that's a mile away from the site I've identified. And so, and that our community needs funding for that regional park, which is also a park that Raquel uses for her outings. And so I would love to see support go to more regional parks, and especially in the Central Valley, because the Central Valley, the outdoors, the conversation about going outside, and while these beautiful places like Yosemite and all these state parks are near, we don't have a culture of getting outside. And so I would really love to see this conversation drive my community, the Central Valley, to support the outdoors, getting outside, funding our regional parkways so that we don't have to go across the nation to visit the outside and advocate. So
thank you, Juan. Second.
Yeah, I agree with Juan a lot. And to expand or expose the parks that are within our cities. A lot of people, even just here, I had somebody like, oh, I don't even know where to go outside here in D.C. I'm like, I went to the, I'm going to say this really wrong,
Arboretum?
Yes, never. Thank you. Yeah. And there's right there, you know, there's so many hikes that you could, like, take people there, or just around the park here by the mall, the Capitol Mall. There's so many places that you could go in within a city. You don't have to go either to a national park or state park if that's not on the way. And that's kind of like the same stuff that we have there in the Central Valley. It's so hard to find something outdoorsy that people would like consider it within our region. But there is that thing there. And it's like kind of like what I started doing a program for Latino Outdoors is exploring my backyard, where we'll be exploring different like parks, either regional, city, national parks around the Central Valley to say, hey, there is something around here to do.
That's great. Well, I want to thank our panelists for your time today. Let's give them a big round of applause. Really appreciate you sharing your stories. So, and I'll turn it over to Bo to introduce our next speaker. So thank you very much.
Thank you.
Hey guys, thank you so much for coming out here, and if we can get another round of applause for our panelists. And thank you, Janae, so much for moderating the panel. I really appreciate it. My name is Bo Machayo. I'm in the Office of Public Engagement here for the White House Council on Environmental Quality. So on behalf of Christy Goldfuss, the Managing Director, I want to say thank you so much for coming here and joining us today for this film screening of Estamos Aquí. I can remember it like it was yesterday that Jose came to me and said, hey, I think we should do this. And after, you know, watching the short film, I was more than convinced that this was something that we needed to do. This greater story of connecting our public lands to the entire story of the United States. My mom is from Uganda and my dad is from Kenya. So growing outdoors also, like many of people have said who've come before me, has been a huge part of my life. Having to work here under the president has been one of the biggest honors that I've ever had. And it's great to see leaders across agencies and across the United States, like Deputy Secretary Michael Connor, who leads the Department of Interior. He leads the initiative for with Secretary Sally Jewell to really connect what that's the larger story of what the president always talks about connecting our lands, making them tell the whole story of the United States and not just part of it. He also is key in implementing the department's land buyback program, which has really moves leaps and bounds since his leadership. Also, something that is not too common in this town, he was okayed by Congress and confirmed by Congress without any opposition. So something must be really great about him. So without further ado, here's Deputy Secretary Michael Connor.
Thanks a lot, Bo. I what is that? You take what you've got and you run with it, because I'm not sure that without opposition thing could happen, you know, a third time. So I don't anticipate testing the waters there. Thank you very much for having me. It's a great occasion. We're here in National Hispanic Heritage Month. Very much appreciate the opportunity. This dialogue, which I think is incredibly important. I want to give special thanks to Jose Gonzalez, Latina Outdoors, for suggesting pulling this together, having us participating in this discussion. I've got my, you know, talk here that I want to go through to let you know what it is that we're doing at the Interior Department. But I got to tell you, I walked into this discussion, and it's amazing the things that resonate, you know, from a discussion. And all of a sudden, I heard my own mom's voice. A little different context from public lands, but I get the point I think Eduardo made, which was, you know, culturally, things don't always apply the way you think they will. I remember after I graduated from college, I moved to Denver and I got a job and was making money on my own, and my parents came to town, and my wife and I took my parents out to this very high-end restaurant in Denver. It was specialized in wild game, you know, venison, elk, sheep. And I take my mom there, and my mom's like, what are we doing here, you know? And I'm like, well, this is a great restaurant, Mom. She's like, I grew up eating this stuff, you know? This was our food. And, you know, every iteration I learned a little bit about how she grew up, which was different than how I grew up. But it's very insightful, and I get the point. And it's amazing how quickly that came back into my head as I sat down. These events are important, and the work of Latino groups are just absolutely critical. Hi, Maite. Seeing good friends out here. Because America's great outdoors are just as diverse as its people, and they bring unique experiences, and they are unique places. And connecting those cultures, we have not done a historically great job of. We're still trying to figure out how to best to do that. And these dialogues and these connections that we're making and this assistance that we're getting as part of this dialogue is just incredibly important from the Interior Department's perspective. And so we highly value the input, we highly value the advocacy, and most of all, the outreach. Minorities continue to be underrepresented when it comes to visitation to national parks and our public lands. And I think organizations like Latino Outdoors give voice to the Latino community and also remind them that our landscapes are open to everyone. But equally in that bit of outreach and work in the Latino community, it's work that reminds us that we, the stewards of these national parks and public lands, we have a lot to do to make sure that these public places, these treasures of our national heritage reflect the diversity of our country and are more inviting to the diversity that exists within this country. So let me talk a little bit about the need to increase diversity and the actions that were taken with respect to our parks and public lands. In 2015, we drew more than 443 million visitors to our parks, national parks, public lands, and waters. It's no secret that on average that those visitors were mostly older and Caucasian, and not enough of those visitors reflect the fuller fabric of the nation from a diversity standpoint, ethnic diversity, as well as youth, quite frankly. And so I can see some of this changing. I just spent a good 2 weeks in California with my family visiting national parks. The good thing is I don't have to say dragging them to national parks. They actually look forward to every vacation that we've done, which over the last 7.5 years have all been in national parks. And I was surprised. We went to Yellowstone, Yosemite, and spent 4 days in Yosemite. And maybe it's reflective of advances that we're making. Maybe it's just me being a lot more sensitive to the issue. But I did sense, and it was California, there was a lot of diversity, particularly Latino, particularly young Latinos who were hiking and experiencing the park. And maybe that is because it's California and it's more accessible, but maybe it is the more and more, particularly in a centennial year where the word is getting out and we are increasing visitation in a more diverse fashion. I certainly hope so. But even with some progress, for too long, national parks have ignored important parts of our nation's story. And it's very rewarding for us at the Interior Department to be part of President Obama's administration and to recognize what he has done personally using his own authority that he has to expand the story and make our national parks, public lands, and national monuments more relevant to all Americans. And so at the Interior Department, we are trying to follow the president's leadership and do our part. and focusing on making sure we are telling a more diverse story about America, especially through the National Park Service, which is our nation's storyteller. And I'm probably going to use up more time than I'm allotted through these stories, but I have a great story about being in Mexico City in 2010 with Secretary Salazar. We were there to sign one of our very historic agreements with Mexico on Colorado River management, and the Secretary, well, first he leans over to me, says, you know, my Spanish isn't that good, you know, should I try it out here, or should I, you know, just talk in English? I'm like, are you kidding? You're asking me? I'm the Latino background, and I don't speak Spanish, even though my mother's fluent. You should use your Spanish. So, of course, he spoke in Spanish, which immediately gave him a very warm reception there. And then he just started talking about the Interior Department, and he relayed the story how part of him was offended that when he was growing up, he kept hearing this story about how his ancestors landed at Plymouth Rock. And from his own knowledge, no, they did not. They came up through Mexico and settled in northern New Mexico and then the San Luis Valley in Colorado. So you can imagine we're in Mexico City with a bunch of leadership of the Mexican government. He's relaying this story. And he was, to the extent he wasn't before, it was rock star status immediately. And we had a great next 48 hours as he was celebrated. But it's something that he held very firm views on and thought dearly. And the best part is that Secretary Jewell feels just as strongly and has continued that approach. So early on in this administration, the National Park Service commissioned a Latino heritage theme study to identify historic places and to opportunities to protect and recognize and preserve them to help tell that story for the Latino community. The study has a number of areas and a lot of historical information related to it, in addition to looking at specific places that tell the story of the Latino culture in the United States. We now have places like Cesar Chavez National Monument that help tell that story, a portion of that story, and we're very proud to manage that. But it also, that information helps us to diversify our interpretation of our existing parks and adds to that story and adds to what we can do. Every park has many stories. They're not all just, you know, preserving wonderful, spectacular landscapes. People of all different backgrounds have come through those landscapes. And these theme studies will help us not only add to the number of places that we look at protecting and preserving, but also telling those stories in a more robust way. I would also say the Department of Interior is recognizing that our newest citizens, and I think this is pretty important given today's dialogue, political dialogue, our newest citizens add to our story of diversity, and they bring with them unique experiences to our public lands. As part of the commemoration week activities that we did a few weeks ago at the end of August, commemorating the specific week of the 100th anniversary of the National Parks, Secretary Jewell was crisscrossing across the country and I was doing like a mini tour. But part of what I did was participate in a naturalization ceremony at Fort McHenry National Monument in Baltimore. 25 new citizens who were welcomed and sworn in at a national park location. It's a partnership that we've had with the Naturalization Service, and it's one where we're doing 100 ceremonies across the country this year. Our public lands and national parks will continue to thrive only if all Americans of all backgrounds care deeply about them. And it was clear that in that setting, these newest citizens, that was what we discussed about their responsibilities as citizens, as well as celebrating that they had become citizens and how doing that ceremony in a national park reflected their responsibilities to advocate and help protect these precious places as they were now owners of these public lands. In addition to what we're doing at the National Park Service, diversifying our approach and expanding our outreach to different communities involves engaging youth. It's incredibly important to diversify and support interest in advocacy, ultimately, to create that next generation of stewards of our public lands. Last month I traveled as part of that same week to Atlanta. That was the farthest destination I went out to. I spent the day with a HOPE crew, which is hands-on preservation experience. It's a partnership with the National Historic Preservation Association. They have developed these HOPE crews, and of course they are doing wonderful work in helping us preserve and protect our historic cultural sites that exist down there at Martin Luther King National Historic Site. I got to paint a house with a number of those youth, and it was indicative of everything that we're trying to accomplish. It gave them hands-on experience, good practical experience. Three of the young ladies were starting a business as a result of that experience, and a number of them had come to realize how important these national parks are to telling their story. The talk I gave at the celebration ceremony was all about using the parks to promote the diversity that exists in our country and do a better job of it. And I don't think I've ever had more people come up to me afterwards from all age ranges saying they had not thought of the parks that way. It's clear that when we do this outreach, when we try and include a broader audience, that it's received very well. And so doing that particularly with youth for all the benefits it gives them as well as gives us is incredibly important. And as all of you who know Secretary Jewell very well, this is her passion. Working to ensure a new diverse group of young people will be ready to become the future of conservation in this country. Through the work we're doing with 21 CSC, her play, learn, serve, work agenda, our 50 cities initiative, and of course the Every Kid in the Park initiative, which we started in celebration of the centennial, but we are determined to include throughout the years. Through these partnerships and these various groups, we are creating employment, career development, opportunities for young people, and we are hoping to attract them to a lifetime of conservation work. And selfishly, we are hoping to reap the benefits of their experience and their interest in becoming stewards of our public lands. We are having some success with the National Park Service. We have the Latino Heritage intern program, which I think is growing in interest level in the Hispanic community, as well as our ability to bring young people on. BLM's Colorado Diversity Intern Program funded 21 diverse youth in FY 2015, and 76% of those youth were Hispanic. And so we are working to identify more opportunities, and quite frankly, we need to do that. It's been a little frustrating at the Interior Department. As a Bureau Director, I ran the Bureau of Reclamation before becoming Deputy Secretary. We have focused a lot of time and effort in trying to move the numbers and increasing the diversity of our workforce. We have done that with hires, but it's not shown through retention at times. So we've got a lot of challenges in front of us. And we know there's an active dialogue going on about that. And we share the concerns, and we are intent on doing what we can as administration officials of putting in place a solid foundation to move those numbers after we're gone. And of course, we have a dedicated career staff who are equally up for that challenge. Let me just add, these programs, this outreach, this exposure, it works. For me, it's not just professional, it's personal. I have kids in the age range where we can still hopefully influence and motivate them through creative means. So we have, I mentioned, we've done almost exclusively national park vacations over the last 7 years. It's translated into my own son, who's now a sophomore in college, after telling me for years, I'd never want to do that government stuff you want to do. He's in a natural resources outdoor recreation program at Colorado State. He was part of an SCA trail team back in the summer of 2015. He did not do this past summer, but he wishes he had now, so I have that, you know, to hold over him. And there's just both. My daughter, similarly, she doesn't have that level of interest, but boy, does she like to recreate, and she likes to be in these outdoors, and she loves our vacations. So anecdotally and professionally, I think this outreach works, this exposure works. It works in people in different ways. And it just shows if we invest the time and resources and effort to carry out these programs to diversify our approach, I think we will be successful, but it needs to be a sustained effort. We, as I mentioned, are committed to doing just that. So those are the various things that we have in place. Those are the programs, initiatives that we want to institutionalize moving forward to give you all a strong foundation to continue that advocacy as we move forward. I think we're making a difference. I think the president's leadership has been incredibly valuable and given us a lot of space to work. And the job now is to continue those efforts through the next 8 years. And whether we're doing that on the inside or the outside, I think we're all going to keep doing that one way or another. So thank you very much for your time. I've probably used more than my allotted time, but if there are a couple of questions, I'd be happy to try and give the best answers possible. Anybody? Oh, yeah.
Why do you not mention national heritage areas when you talk about story keepers as the National Park Service? I have seldom heard national parks employees talk about national heritage areas. And I am a recently retired National Heritage Area ED, which is why I bring up the question. There are two within the United States that focus on Latino heritage, but it never rises to the top. Northern Rio Grande and Sangre de Cristo National Heritage Area.
Right.
And those are ways to tell that story that has been buried, but why are they never spoken of?
I think it's a couple reasons. From my own perspective, it's an oversight. There is a lot of support within the National Park Service of touting the benefits of national heritage areas, quite frankly. It always is attention in the budget discussions, and that's, I think, somewhat why it flies below the radar screen. But as far as the idea of including them as well as, you know, national historic landmarks, that's all part of what we're talking about of trying to elevate and tell the story. Quite frankly, I think it's an oversight on my part not to mention that and to tout that that's part of what we need to be doing is including those areas. And as you know, the communities are so supportive of having those areas. They're proud of them, and they do represent a capability to tell part of that story. I think you're right.
So there's a lot of efforts being put on by the Department of Interior and other public lands agencies to diversify their workforce. And my question is there any kind of plans to make sure that that diversity doesn't just stay at the bottom in terms of our park rangers mm-hmm. and those that work in our parks, but, you know, folks in the regional director's offices or here in Washington that have kind of decision-making power, that they also are representative of our nation's diversity?
There's been a lot of discussion about not, and that's part of the retention issue that I think we've found, is to bring in, you know, diverse employees at the ground level and try and quickly promote them. And those opportunities don't always arise as quickly as we'd like, but it's because also we don't have enough of those folks at the ground level. So I think the discussions I've been part of, it's that we do have to, you know, ensure that there are opportunities to move up, you know, and people see the success in their own career. And we do that by ensuring that, you know, there's a diverse pool of people that we can look at those jobs. But I think equal to that or even more, people are still of the view we don't have enough of those entry-level diverse employees. And so that gets back to the internship programs, the opportunities, and then now what I think, you know, one of our objectives is we've gotten new hiring authority, which allows us to take from those training programs, those internships, and bring people on. What we found out is those authorities don't actually work the way we thought they would, but that's okay. They're in place. It's easier to amend and give the time. Adjust time frames, make them a little bit more user-friendly. I think that's a big objective before we leave. So we've got to work on it on both levels, but I still think, you know, I think that's part of this dialogue that we need to get feedback from people and understand what others are saying, is that we just need more diverse at the entry level, and then we will have more opportunities to bring people up the ranks and get them in the middle management than the highest levels of management.
Rojas. I'm the chairman of the Latino Outdoors Advisory Board, and recently the Park Service didn't sponsor the movie, but I think somehow endorsed the movie, the IMAX movie about the centennial celebration. And there was no diversity represented in that particular feature movie. Who's responsible, and how do we make it better the next time?
I don't know the answer to your question. I sat and watched that movie about a month ago. It's something that I took away from that. So I think it's a lost opportunity. I really don't understand our role in that, but I'm sure it was, and it's, we were associated with that, and it certainly helps tell the centennial story. That's something I should follow up on. I appreciate you raising the point. Yep. Yes, sir.
My question is, in terms of some of the noise that keeps people, especially Latinos, from going outdoors, is the fear of deportation. And so how can we work together to create a safe environment in these public lands without that fear kind of a badge, of a public figure? Yeah. How can we make it a safe space?
I think... And I've heard that, you know, just any badge represents risk and challenge. I think, you know, there are probably some specific ways to do that, but I think overall it's making the parks more inviting, making it understood that they are representative of all Americans, that they're welcoming of all Americans, and that they are safe places to be, because the idea is to give positive, good experiences, and there's not risk to that. So there's a lot of outreach and education that needs to be done about what the parks are, because, as you know, there's not a risk of deportation from people going to parks. But it's part of the outreach that we need to be doing to make it sure that people understand there is no risk and they're welcoming. There's places that we want you to bring your family, that we want you to experience, that we want you to enjoy. And we want to see you to be able to see where it's appropriate, which is in most places, that your culture is represented, that there's part of your story there that should be of interest, as well as just the ability to enjoy the great outdoors in a lot of places. Oh, Denise.
Hi.
Hi.
Some of you know me. I'm Denise Ryan. I'm Deputy Director of the National Park Service, and I was just here planning to enjoy the film, but since the gentleman brought the question about the IMAX film, thought I would share what I know, and that is that the film was created by the Department of Commerce, Brand USA, to be used as a marketing tool for international tourists to come to America. So some of us in the director's office saw some of the early screenings of the film, and I can tell you that the diversity representation in the first few screenings was even worse than what you saw, and we were very disappointed with it too, and the message that it conveyed. So I think there's more follow-up that could be done in the future on that, but we were disappointed with that outcome as well, and thank you for mentioning that.
Thanks a lot for clarifying what our role was with respect to that. So it's less than I thought, but that doesn't mean there's not a need to follow up, quite frankly.
Here today, it's like I couldn't think of anything negative I wanted to share, but I've taken away from that movie, and I've heard from so many in the community, as an agency, as the National Park Service, as an agency, we're celebrating the centennial. That's all of our legacy. That's all of our heritage. Why were we not included as a community? Mm-hmm. So that's I'm the messenger today. So again, thank you for hosting, and we're very honored.
No, absolutely. Thank you for coming. And quite frankly, you know, this is I hope this is the perception from the Latino community that we're friends, we're trying to advance interests, that we have some good ways to do that, and that means friends can have honest conversations with each other. And it's not regarded in any way, shape, or form as disrespectful at all, and I didn't take it that way. It's a good topic of dialogue, quite frankly.
Mr. Connor, my name is Alex Romero. I'm the superintendent for the George Washington Memorial Parkway, and I was also the superintendent at National Capital Parks East. I'm one of the senior managers in the National Capital Region, so as a Latino, I would like to say New Yorican. born in New York. I struggle with creating those environments. I've had open houses. I've had public engagement with Latino communities. And as much as I struggle, I still can't get them through my doors. I've done interviews with the local papers. I've gone on radio. I've done press releases. The most recent thing that I've done with the director a few years ago was through the White House. I had some Latino leaders come around the table to see what we could do a little differently to provide these experiences. And it's still a daunting task. So I think through Jose and Mate and some other groups, we are engaging, but I could talk Spanish, I could talk Spanish, I could talk English. It's just a struggle that I have as a leader in the National Capital Region to get folks in my doors. So I think it's just more of a statement. We're trying, but it's difficult. I just wanted to throw that out.
No, that's good, helpful information to have. I think that's the value that we see. There are a number of Latino organizations now, and I think the more the better, because each one presents an opportunity to access, you know, maybe different parts of the community or maybe several ways into some same elements. And as we know, with affecting change, a lot of it takes time. I would hope, and it's part of the discussion we have, are we seeing at least some, that's been the frustration with the diversity of the workforce. It really, seeing some numbers at times and thinking it's not been set aside, where we've been actively working on it and thinking, okay, this is the next step. It's a little bit frustrating, so I think we need to keep looking at, where we've gone down a path that we thought we're going to be successful. Let's do the analysis. Why wasn't it? And try a different avenue, a different door. There's challenges, and we need help from external organizations that we can partner up with and try and, collectively make progress. I think I'm definitely standing in the way of a screening, which is why everybody came here in the first place. But I certainly appreciate the opportunity to have the dialogue with all of you and to be here and to be reminded of my mother's voice.